One of my favorites, I've actually talked about this one before, but there's some new stuff on it, which is the you know, often included no challenge provisions that licensors like to have in an agreement saying, hey, we're going to do this license, but you're not going to ever, you're going to contractually promise never to challenge validity of the patents in the future, et cetera. A similar type of provision, the non-assistance provision, which has a particular impact on attorneys who are involved in license negotiation. So, and then finally, some new stuff related to kind of this perennial question of what law governs the interpretation of patent licenses, whether it's state law or whether federal common law principles, like from the Fed Circuit, are relevant to that. So lots to cover in 30 minutes, but I'm going to zoom through it really quickly and at least give you a taste of what's going on in these areas. And if any are particularly interesting to you, at least you'll know where to maybe dig in a little bit more. All right, let's talk about exhaustion. Patent exhaustion, we all know from basic patent law, is the idea that when there's an initial authorized sale of a patented item, all patent rights are terminated in that item. That item is therefore exhausted. It's the analog to the first sale doctrine in copyright law, both of which kind of say, once it's out there, in theory, at least what the Quanta case tries to tell us is that the inventor should have gotten what they needed out of it, and there's no more public policy promoting, you know, the arts and sciences or whatever the Constitution says it's supposed to be about after that point, so we don't let them enforce after that point. But of course, enterprising businessmen look for ways to continue to get revenue or some kind of consideration out of their product, and so are often tempted to place restrictions on a patented item even after it's been sold, with the idea that maybe they can preserve some market, not have, you know, people reusing items, et cetera. And so there have been a series of cases that try to reconcile the exhaustion doctrine, which is pretty fundamental, to the interest of the licensor or the patent owner to control products after sale. This has been particularly interesting after a Fed Circuit case from 1992 called Mallinckrodt. Mallinckrodt involved a patent owner who was selling these little nebulizers to hospitals, and the nebulizers came packaged with wording that said, you know, you can only use this once, you must dispose of it. That wasn't a safety thing, because in fact you could reuse after cleaning a nebulizer, but it was an attempt to form a contractual prohibition so that hospitals had to buy more nebulizers, not reuse them, right? Medipart was a company that basically took old nebulizers from hospitals. I guess the hospitals didn't throw them away, but gave them to them and refurbished them and then would resell them back to the hospital much cheaper than the original. So Mallinckrodt sued Medipart for patent infringement. And of course, Medipart said, wait a minute, the product was sold and therefore, and that was an authorized sale to the hospital. So therefore, exhaustion has taken place and you don't have patent rights, right? But in that case, in the Mallinckrodt case, the Fed Circuit said, well, not so fast, because if there's these conditions accompanying the sale, maybe it's not really a sale of the type that the exhaustion doctrine was meant to cover, and you have a right to potentially do some of that. And so this all kind of came to a head recently in 2016, 2017, when the Mallinckrodt doctrine, you know, was used a bunch of times by lots of licensors. Lots of courts looked at it and said, well, Mallinckrodt tells us that if you put these conditions on, it's really not exhausted. And Lexmark is a perfect example of that. In 2016, this involved, printer cartridges and reiterated the Mallinckrodt rule that as long as the use restrictions are communicated to the buyer at the time of the sale, then the patent owner's rights really aren't exhausted and the owner can continue. And this went up to the Supreme Court, which kind of said, hold on a minute. You know, we're not sure where this came from, but patent exhaustion is patent exhaustion. A sale is a sale. And since Mallinckrodt, it looks like the Fed Circuit has been carving out this concept that we don't agree with. And all eight justices who weighed in said, look, you just can't do this. If you're going to try to control things post-sale, you have to not rely on patent law to do that because of the exhaustion doctrine and really kind of close the door on those things. All right, what does this mean for us as we draft or consider patent licenses and patent transactions? Well, don't forget that just because you can't do it via patent infringement doesn't mean you cannot continue to enforce rights via contract. We'll talk in a minute about misuse and whether that's a problem there, but for a moment, let's focus in on the contract right. The Supreme Court very clearly said that they were not weighing in on whether there was a contract breach in the Lexmark case. One of the issues there, of course, is there needs to be a valid contract, but in assuming there is a valid contract between the patent owner and the party that has purchased the patent item, even if the rights under patent are exhausted, the subsequent sale or use or exploitation of that item by the buyer very well could be a breach of contract, which gives rise to a different set of damages, just not patent infringement. So if you've got a client coming to you and saying, I'd like to restrict post-sale this patented item, you have to tell them about exhaustion, but then you can explore at least the idea of, well, maybe we can do it with contract. There are problems there, of course, right? One is that if the reuser, like in that first case, Mallinckrodt, is not the party to whom you sold,